This is right.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be the mini show for the month of October 2021.
Yes. Well done.
And I've said this before. I've said this before because we've already recorded a show, but that's going to be an After Dark. I'm going to say it's the mini show in the opening. It's not. I'm a liar. This is the mini show because we're going to talk about
games.
Why
don't you just edit it?
No. Come on. You don't mess with perfection.
Are you sure?
That After Dark is perfect.
I know we got a lot of sock talk here that we made.
What a time to be alive.
Got one in.
October spooky. We got it all out of our system. Anything about the Holocaust you want to bring up?
It definitely happened. It is real.
I agree, Wes.
So, we can talk about whatever we please. We did a lot of movie talk in the After Dark. You'll find out, listeners. But I got one or two games that I'm going to talk about. If you guys have any games, we'll bring those up as well.
I got one.
Okay, I'll be good. Is that one Metroid Dread?
No.
Because that's what we're going to talk about.
Is as well as Metroid Dread.
Yeah, this we're hot off the presses here. Metroid Dread came out 5 days ago at time of recording. We have both been playing. Ryan, have you been playing Metroid Dread?
I have not.
Okay. Disco Elysium? That's also
I have not been playing that either, no.
Oh, okay.
I've been very busy watching God horror films.
It's good to see you're spending your time wisely.
Yeah. No, I've actually been super busy with other things. I have not had as much time as I would have liked to try video games, but...
Mm.
But do you go on?
Yeah, I've been in a similar situation as well, because the past week and a half, I've been working very early shifts where I have to be... at work at 5:30 a.m. It's been very disgusting. It ruins the entire day because when I get home from work, it's maybe only 2:45 or 3 p.m., but don't want to do anything the entire day. It's
Are you a napper? I'm not a napper.
I'm a napper when it's that kind of bullshit.
Every once in a while, but only like a power nap, 20 or 30 minutes, and then
yeah,
I'm up again.
Mine's an hour. Like, I got to get down for a whole hour, and then... I'm generally okay to go.
Mm.
I don't think I've ever had a nap where I felt better for having done the nap.
Desi's the same way. Yeah, yeah, she'll wake up groggy if she takes a nap, so she doesn't do it.
Your brother Jeffrey, because he does like 4 a.m. to 7?
Ugh.
4 a.m. to 8? Something like that.
About 4 hours a day?
Something like that. He gets paid more because it's way early in the morning. But he does that, and then he takes naps every day.
Mm.
So you just... He'll go to bed early, do his bullshit work, because he unloads the truck at Target.
Right.
And then he'll come home and, nap for a few hours and then do his day.
Try to live like a normal person for a little bit.
Essentially just play New World for 8 hours or whatever, and then go to bed. I mean, that's... He just hops on his laptop and starts playing games.
But Metroid Dread, it's been out for a few days. I've been able to put some time into it. Wes has as well. I'm a little bit further.
You're quite a bit further. Don't.
So we won't get into too many specifics. We'll just give some general first impressions and maybe do a bit more of a thorough breakdown on the official show. But I do have a lot that I want to talk about without getting into specifics of what power-ups are where and this and that. But Wes, before the show,
yes,
you were talking about wanting a general catch-up and
update. I would like a what is the story? Because they give you a brief story breakdown at the beginning of Metroid Dread. I was like, I still don't know what the fuck the Chozo are. Like, I know a vague thing as a Prime, but I don't really know because that was years ago.
So an important thing to remember about Prime is there is some backstory stuff that's revealed in Prime, but the Prime games take place in a sort of pocket of the chronology of Metroid games. So it, of course, goes Metroid, Metroid 2, Super Metroid, Metroid Fusion, and now Metroid Dread. And those are, the main chronology. And Prime,
Where does Other M fall?
Oh, sorry, yes, Other M also exists. Other M is between Super Metroid and Metroid Fusion.
Oh, wow.
And Prime, I think... Wow. Prime is between between Metroid 2 and Super Metroid, I think. I might have that confused a little bit. But all of, like, the Prime games take place in, like, a block. They're all, like, in sequence with each other. And then the chronology of the other main five plus other M continues from there.
Because there's nothing really Prime tying them together. It's kind of like their own things going on.
Right. It's all, like, the Prime games are all kind of tied together by the space pirate civilization experimenting with phazon radiation. Mm-hmm. And that culminates with corruption, where Samus gets, like, the phazon radiation corruption in her body that gives her all sorts of superpowers. Yeah,
this chick goes through some shit.
She really does. Yeah. So, Metroid 1 for the NES starts off with Samus going to the planet SR388, where there are... sorry, no. Scratch that. I think she might...
some nerd listening. Like, I'm actually...
Somebody needs to actually this, because I think she's actually going to Zeebs, or Zebes, if you want to pronounce it correctly. But I've always said Zeebs. But it wasn't until Other M that I had heard it actually pronounced as Zebes. Because the first game with voice acting. Aside from corruption. Never mind. The...
Geek off, dude.
Right, she goes to Zebes, and her goal there is to take down the space pirates and Mother Brain, who is there. Kind of the artificial intelligence leader of the space pirates. She does that. On her way, she encounters these creatures called Metroids that the space pirates are trying to use in order
I thought Mother Brain was a Metroid.
No, Mother Brain's not a Metroid. Mother Brain it is an artificial intelligence unit that the Galactic Federation also uses. And this is something you learn a little bit about in Metroid Prime 3 Corruption. You know, there's Aurora units in Corruption. I don't know if there's ever been official confirmation, but those seem like they're also just other Mother Brains. Other artificial intelligence units for these different places that the space pirates are able to get a hold of one and turn it into their own thing. But on Zebes, she encounters other Metroid creatures, and the Galactic Federation is like, hey, what the fuck are these things? These are terrible, so we are going to commit some genocide and exterminate them. So Metroid 2, Return of Samus, is for the Game Boy, and then it was also remade for the 3DS. And that's her going to planet SR388, the home planet of the Metroids, and just going to go around and just kill them all. And that game ends with Samus killing all the Metroids except for one infant Metroid who sort of like bonds with Samus and sees her as like a sisterly or maternal figure and just kind of goes with her. And at the end of that, in between that and Super Metroid, the Galactic Federation takes it away from her. And she again goes to Zebes to... I think they detected more Metroids, or she goes back there to fight the space pirates again. But basically she goes there to refight the battle that she basically fought in Metroid 1. At the very end is in a position where she's about to be killed. The baby Metroid comes and saves her, gives her superpowers, and then dies. So it like gives her some of its like its power or you know essence or whatever. So Samus kind of becomes like the last Metroid in that turn. Metroid Fusion has her returning to planet SR388, where all the Metroids were that she exterminated. But now the planet has been overrun by this virus. They just call it the X virus, and that's the Galactic Federation takes some of it onto a space station, and that's where you're playing through all of Metroid Fusion on the space station where this virus has run amok. And while she's on SR388, before the Federation takes the virus to the space station, she gets infected with the virus, and they use Metroid DNA from the corpse of the baby Metroid in order to cure her, because it turns out that Metroids were a natural predator of this virus, which is why the virus has been running amok on the planet, because all the Metroids are now dead. And at the end of Fusion, she takes down an Omega Metroid. And that's why in Fusion, like when you kill the enemies, there's like the little amoeba things floating around. That's an X virus, and because she's been fused with Metroid DNA, she's able to absorb that, and it actually heals her because of the space science shit. Metroid Dread then picks up, so she's still got the Metroid DNA fused with her. I forget the narrative setup. I'm going to have to watch the thing again just to get the details. But she's going to this other planet, and she is attacked on her way down. Taken out by that warrior Chozo guy. And to your question earlier, the Chozo are a space civilization. They do have a home planet, but they kind of go to different parts of the galaxy. And they're very technologically advanced, but they're also sort of like... there's like a caste system within the Chozo. There are like scientist ones and warrior ones. And they're often at odds with each other, all the different factions.
So they're still around. They're still...
Yeah, well, maybe. There's evidence in some places that there's not very many of them around anymore. And actually, if I remember correctly... Metroid Dread is that warrior Chozo is the first time you've actually ever seen Samus interact with them. She has interacted with Chozo before. They adopted her after her not necessarily her, I don't know if his entire planet, but her sort of settlement on a planet was taken out by space pirates. So they found her, adopted her, sort of raised her to a certain point that she rejoins humanity. And they gave her the power suit technology. So she's got the power suit because of them. And now we're on Metroid Dread. And Metroid Dread is real good. Like, I'm really pleased with how this game turned out. The Metroid game we got before this one most recently was Metroid Samus Returns. Samus Returns. It was the remake of the Game Boy game. And I talked about that game a few times now, but what I really liked about it is it was very like sort of like in chapters almost, where you have one section of the map, and once you're going to get all of the power ups you need in order to complete that area. In that area, you're going to fight your boss fights. You're going to move on to the next one. The only reason you would ever need to backtrack to it was to like. Collect any bonus items, so extra missiles or energy tanks, things like that. Whereas, and I like that sort of thing because it kind of felt like a bunch of mini Metroid games all kind of strung together. And then once you get to the end, you can backtrack through all of them and get all of the things that you want to 100% the game. And I really like the way that they mixed up, like they had like this escalating boss fight thing. So you're essentially fighting a lot of the same bosses over and over again, but the different sort of environments they put them in, or like the different mutations that that occurred, would change the way you were fighting them. Metroid Dread has that same sort of sense of scale where you're in these really big areas, but there's a lot more of like, okay, now you got a thing, now you need to go back to a previous area and figure out like where you can use that thing in order to advance there a little bit more. So there's a lot more moving around between all of the different zones in the game.
That does not bode well for me.
It's a giant maze. It's like a great big maze. Metroid is...
That doesn't bode well for me. I'm going to have a rough time with this game.
Ryan asked something about this before we started recording, about how it like compares to Hollow Knight. And Metroid is... They both have a grand sense of scale, where you're going to be in a big world and there's going to be a lot of different places you can go and different things that you're going to interact with. But Metroid's much more of like a hedge maze, where you're going to go one area and you're going to find the thing that you need in order to advance a little bit more, and then maybe find another thing and then go back and tinker around in a different area a little bit. Hollow Knight is much more ambiguous, where in Metroid, you're always going to find the next thing you need in order to advance on a critical path, and you're going to find everything you need before you get to the end of the game. Whereas in Hollow Knight, there's a lot of things missable. You're not going to miss anything crucial in a Metroid. You might miss a lot of like energy tanks and missile upgrades and things like that, but nothing that is going to be essential for the final fight. Because they do things...
They do a good job of like kind of... letting you know generally where you need to be to get that next critical thing before you can move on, or do you really just need to start just wandering in random directions and poking at walls?
It is a bit... It's not, like, opaque, but it's a bit more vague in Metroid Dread than it has been in other Metroid games, which I really like. Sometimes a Metroid game will just kind of like overtly like give you a pointer on your map, like that's where you want to go, figure out how to get there. But in Metroid Dread, they give you a map with a ton of information on it, and it does a lot of things that will like track the things for you, like, hey, this door has this sort of lock over it. So when you find that power-up, it'll then update your map, like, hey, now you can go back and open that one if you want to. But what it won't do is then say, okay, you found the thing. You're definitely going to want to use that in this place next. So consulting your map is something you end up, that I end up doing a lot in order to just kind of see, okay, what other things have I found now? So where might I be able to make progress next? And it becomes like an essential thing to do when you get like toward like the middle or middle late parts of the game, because you find stuff and you've traversed so much territory that you find something like, okay, I know I can use this somewhere, but where is that? And another thing that they do like that's really, really cool, it's a really interesting thing that they do with the level design, and typically in a Metroid game or a game similar to this, when you get the tool to open up a new area, it's going to remain open, and you're always going to have this freedom of movement back and forth. And that's not always going to be the case in Metroid Dread. Sometimes you do things that alters the environment that then like sequesters you off from a path that took you to a place that you might want to backtrack to. So you have to find a way to loop around and approach it in a different way. It's a really interesting way of constructing this maze, because it never makes it to where you feel entirely comfortable with the space you're in. So there have been times where I like look at my map and I'm like, okay, if I want to get there, I should just be able to backtrack down this way. Like, oh wait, no, things have changed. I can't go back the other way. And they hit you with a lot of different like elevators and teleportation. Like you don't have free fast travel everywhere, but there are a lot of different ways that they find to like fast travel you or loop you around to where you need to be. I think they struck a really good balance between guiding you to where you go next, but then also just give you that puzzle to solve about what it is you should be doing.
Yeah, it doesn't bode well for me.
You're gonna do all right. You did have a moment, and I had a moment too, where you just got a power up and you're like, I'm not sure where to go next. And it was, there was just a wall in your way that you could shoot that,
yeah, because the bomb block was exposed. Right. And the rest of it just looked like rocks. I'm like, oh, I need a morph ball in order to blow up this thing. I could slay it with a morph ball and the rest of the walk I could just shoot.
Right. Right. So there is, you have to like learn the language of the game where if a piece of a wall gets destroyed but then regenerates and it's just white, you can just destroy that with anything. Whereas if it's purple, you're going to want to use a different power-up. If it's red, that's typically in Metroid games, if something is red and is blocking your way, use a missile. Whereas with me, it was, I was at a point in the game where I was in a big room and there was a door in the top right corner, and I was like, well, I can't jump that high, so I need to find a higher jump in order to get up there. And I'm looking at my map, it's like, there's nowhere else that I can make progress. This is the only room, and that door up there is how I'm supposed to move forward, but I can't jump that high. What did I miss? So eventually, I just ended up looking at a video, and as I'm watching the guy play through the stuff I'd already played through, he gets to the point where I'm at in the room. He just looks up, shoots the door, and just makes a jump for it, grabs the ledge and pulls himself up. It's like, oh, son of a bitch. I've been grabbing on ledges this entire fucking game, and it just didn't dawn on me to shoot the door and then grab the ledge that it creates by being open. Cool. So we all have those moments where we just miss something completely fucking obvious.
The enemies,
yeah,
are pretty intense. So I'm only at the point where I've killed my second enemy, but it's pretty intense in a game like this where you need to analyze the different paths and you look around, you gotta see which way to go. But then you walk into an enemy territory and it just turns into, just fucking run, who cares where you're going.
Yep.
And yeah. I end up just overlooking everything, and I end up just running from this thing in different ways over and over and over again as I try to figure out which of these doors I'm supposed to go through. And they handle it pretty well with the, you get that one time use power-up weapon in order to kill the enemy, and now the area is open for normal exploration. I thought that was pretty cool. It's very interesting. It's a good way to just not suddenly have the enemy weapon and just wipe them out every time.
Right.
So it's a pretty cool little thing that they did with that to make you have to do this run from them.
Yeah, it gives you like this additional moment of tension where, you know, so you're not always sure where it's going to be, but then you hear the beeping that it makes, like, oh, fuck, where is it? Because it doesn't always show up, like, on your map. Like, it has to be within a certain a radius. And if you haven't, like, explored that part of the map, it's not going to tell you where it is.
I did have a moment with an Emmy where I was running from it, and I slid under a wall, and the panels shifted. And so I turned around, and I pointed at the wall, because I had the power-up weapon. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to shoot this guy right when it comes up. Not dawning in my head that it's not going to come through the slide that I did. It's going to go... It's too big. It's not going to go through that hole I did. And so I'm like aiming at this hole, waiting for this thing to come through, and just pops up the ledge behind me and kills me. I'm like, oh shit! Like, it was just one of those, like, heart-reaching, like, oh my god! It was great.
Yeah, and it's fun because you're not completely paralyzed. Like, your weapons aren't going to damage it, but if it gets a hold on you, there's a brief flash where you can do your melee counter and break free, and it stuns it for a little bit. I've pulled it off a few times. It's not easy.
No, it's pretty tricky. You got to be pretty precise with it.
And I'm really impressed with the boss fights and how tricky they can be. At times, there are a couple of bosses where I've had to fight them multiple times to, you know, learn their patterns and, you know, learn the stages that they go through and when to counter and when to just kind of fire wildly, just spray and pray. It's really cool how they handle all these different things. There's a boss fight, not the one I just did, which I died quite a few times when you guys were here. There's a boss fight previous to that where I died even more times. And I'm not going to spoil why, but it was a tough one. It was annoying.
The only gripe that I got is the still aim. Mm. When you have the aiming beam out and you can move around. Because it's not the most precise thing, like on like a PlayStation or anything. I don't think the analog on Switch is quite...
Are you using Joy-Cons or a Pro?
I'm using a Pro, which the Pro is better.
Oh, interesting.
But there's, like, for instance... Your camera view changes when you're using the Ultra thing.
Yeah, when you're taking down the Emmy.
When you're taking down the Emmy. And there's one moment where it's low to the ground, and I'm aiming, and I'm trying to shoot in the face, because I had to use one to, like, melt the shield on its face before I could do the charge shot to kill it.
Right.
And my cursor is either too low on the ground, or it just immediately jumps above it. And I was having the damnedest time... Just trying to aim at it. Just trying to... Like, I had to wait till I got really close. Like, it was a hairpin that I got away with it.
Try updating your controllers. Because I haven't had any issues with that. So it might be an issue with, like, maybe the analog stick being bad. Or maybe the controller just needs to have an update. I know you can do that with the Joy-Con. I don't know if...
I was having the damnedest time with that Emmy. Because it just... There's, like, five times I had to run away and just give up on. Because I was like, all right, it's...
That's one of the cool things about the game, not like the aiming issues that you're having, but the due to a weird controller issue, I assume. But like the fact that even when you get the super weapon, it's not like a foregone conclusion that you're going to march up to the Emmy and shoot it. Like, you still need to find like the right spacing in order to pull it off. You still need to avoid getting grabbed by it, because it's still going to be a one-hit KO. The game is pretty generous with checkpoints, especially before a boss fight.
Yeah.
Because they don't always put save rooms right in front of, you know, a boss fight. So, if you're about to go into a boss fight, it'll give you a checkpoint right in front of the door. It is interesting, though, how, like, they don't use, like, save rooms or navigation rooms in order to refill your health and ammo. Mm-hmm. You have to go to separate stations for that.
Yeah, that's weird to me.
I wonder what it would be like if it was. Maybe it just gives you too many opportunities to refill. I don't know. Neither here nor there. They're really generous with just dropping health and missile refills anyway. So
yeah, they're really good with that.
But yeah, the game looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really nice.
I'm getting better at it, because I was having a hard time in the beginning of just running at the thing as I'm shooting it, because I'm trying to aim. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting better at that.
Are you using the melee counter a lot?
I'm starting to use them more.
There are certain enemies where you don't have to, and as you upgrade your guns, of course, you're not gonna
have to
shoot all of them. But there are enemies that, you know, it is a pretty big advantage, and they do also give you the added incentive in Dread as opposed to Samus Returns. Whereas if you kill an enemy, using the melee counter is going to give you a lot more drops, mm-hmm. which is good to have early on.
No, it's good. It's going to be a good one to get through. I'm going to get through it bit by bit, very, very slowly. You're going to beat it next week.
I'm hoping to finish it off in a few days here. We'll see. I had a couple of work buddies, Sam and Pedro, who have already finished it. Sam finished it like the second day after it came out.
That's, dear God, like...
I mean, and I'm being very thorough. Like, this game does a terrible thing.
Oh yeah,
because like it gives you the map, and you get to a map room, and like it'll give you like it'll show you all your rooms and stuff. But then it also has like a shroud or a fog of war over places you haven't been in yet. And even though you can see the shape of the room, you can see that like, this is the path you took through it. And I want to fill in all the squares, you guys. I feel really strongly that I need to fill all the squares. So a room that might take me 2 seconds to run through on a second trip, I'm like, well, no, and now I can move a bit better, so I jump a little bit higher, so now I can fill in all these squares, and it takes me 20 seconds.
Are you going to backtrack to areas that you have no business going to fill in the fog?
I'm
going
to backtrack to look for power-ups, and... if
but
I happen
to... the power-ups are on the map. You know there's a power-up there.
Not always.
Oh.
Not always. And they, you remember how, you've gotten to the point where, like, it'll show you, like, here's a square, and it's sort of, like, a slightly whiter or lighter shade. They're telling you there's a power-up there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not getting specific, but there are, without getting too spoilery, there are ways to make that more specific at a certain point.
Okay.
So, yeah, I dig it. It's real good. Guys got any games?
None here.
I started playing a MMO on my PlayStation.
Never heard of it.
PS4. No, it's called Neverwinter, which is a MMO based on D&D, and it's very like heavily D&D when it comes to, like the kind of enemies that you're running into, the degree that your character is kind of built. It's not like you're straight up making character sheets or anything, but it's a Dungeons and Dragons MMO, and it's pretty good. I am surprised because I can't remember when this came out. It's not a new game, but it looks okay. It runs pretty good. There's like three people in the town when I'm running around, and it's supposed to be an MMO, so I'm expecting more people. But since it's a kind of old game, I don't know how old it is. I could be completely off, and it's like, oh, last year. Like, I have no idea.
I mean, it's still cool that some people are still engaging.
Some people are around.
I see a release date. I don't know if this is a
2016.
Yeah, July of 2016.
All right, that's fine. So it still runs fine. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The combat's pretty good. I made a warlock class, and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Nice.
The quest system is pretty good. It does a good job at giving you the quest for this. Like, you're going to have one quest that's going to take you down to this area, and these quests we're going to give you, you're going to clean up and complete along the way. So there's not a lot of, like, wandering around so far. It's a fun little game. There's not much going on with it. I would recommend it. It's a free-to-play. So, I mean, if you like Dungeons & Dragons and MMOs and this kind of thing, it's definitely worth just a mess around with it for a minute to see if it's it's a pretty cool little thing. I don't have much to say on it because I'm not very far in it at all. I'm only like level 3.
I'm also playing an RPG.
Oh god.
And it's the one that came out at the end of September, Astria Ascending. It was featured in a couple of Nintendo Directs. I went ahead and I took the plunge on that one when I bought Metroid Dread, which, you know, that it's the main reason I tabled the Bug-type Nuzlocke as well as Majora's Mask, but I'll get back to those once I get through Metroid.
Majora's Mask?
Yeah, it's for the Retro Show.
You started playing Majora's Mask?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm at the Great Bay Temple.
I was about to say, did they already release the N64 thing on the Switch? Like, come on!
Yeah, I'd like to play the N64 version, for no other reason than for, you know, the Retro Show purposes to do a comparison.
Like, I will play through Ocarina and then Majora's Mask immediately when that comes out.
Mm. two pretty good games.
Yeah, they're not bad.
They're right.
But Ashria Ascending is a JRPG turn-taking. You get your full party unlocked from the beginning. It's also job-based, where, you know, every character is going to perform a function, and then what you end up doing throughout the game is I've only unlocked two character sub-jobs so far, but they get, like, a secondary job. And when you, like, get the item that unlocks a secondary job, you pretty much have to, okay, you have to choose from one of three, like, secondary classes that you want to give them. And what the secondary class gives you is you're still performing the same basic function. Like, your main character girl is sort of like this tanky character who you're going to want on the front lines. And you can take her character into a few other directions in order to, like, to do things like more, like, stat buffs, or be able to, like, draw more aggro and tank more damage. So you're still performing as the tank of the group, but it gets a bit more nuanced when you get that sub job going. But basically, when you get your job and your sub job, there's even, like, two other, like, sub job slots that you can see in the menu. So there's going to be a lot more. But every one of these jobs has, like, a sphere grid, like Final Fantasy X style. But not nearly as big. You're looking, like, if a sphere grid is, like, 1,000 nodes, then the grid would be, like, 100 nodes in Astria Ascending. But you get four of them for your different jobs. So not nearly to the same scale. But then you also have to choose, okay, am I going to continue to upgrade, like, the main job stats and abilities, or the sub-job might have a new ability in there that I want to work toward. So you got some decision-making to do there. And it's also very similar to Final Fantasy X in that the way you're moving through, you have to go node to node, like on the sphere grid. And in order to unlock abilities, you just need, like, the ability points. But to actually unlock stats, you need, like, a special stat sphere. And when you unlock a node that has a stat upgrade, it's okay, this is one that's, like, for your attack, defense, magic attack, magic defense stats, and you have to pick one. It's going to give you a +4 to one of those, and you have to decide. You can backtrack and change that, but you need one of those stat nodes. Again, you need one of these consumable items, which aren't very plentiful toward the beginning of the game, so you got to think about how you want to build these characters to start off with. The combat itself is pretty standard JRPG type stuff. You are in your turn-taking battle, you select your character action, and then it performs that action. One thing it does not have is it does not have a order of turns thing going on. So you have to kind of decipher, like, which enemy you think is going to be the speediest to maybe try to take them out first. Every enemy is going to have an associated weakness. It could be a weakness to physical attacks. It could be a weakness to any sort of, like, elemental affinity, which is pretty standard RPG stuff. Fire, ice, lightning, wind, water, light, dark are your main sort of elemental attributes. And then exploiting weakness gives you, like, these little consumable counter token things. And what you can do is when you consume those, you're basically buffing up your next attack or skill. So, you know, when you use one of them, it's going to buff up your offensive damage by 50%, and you can take that all the way up to 200%. So exploiting weaknesses is going to give you these really powerful strikes. So learning the weaknesses of the different enemies on the field is going to give you a big advantage in battle. And also, if you're using something that is not weak to, it can have a resistance, it can absorb the damage that you take to it, and that is going to, like, give you negative counters, so you won't be able to apply any of the extra damage stuff. So there are ways to, like, you can scan the enemy, or you can just go into the settings menu and have it set to, like, hey, just display all enemy weaknesses for me. So you can take the easy way out if you want. I mean,
which one are you doing?
I had it just set to, like, just tell me, but now that I've unlocked the skill to where I can actually scan the enemy, I'm turning it off, because now I can, like, it's weird, because I've played for 7 or 8 hours, and I just got the ability to scan an enemy, So it seems like that should be something they should be giving you earlier. But all of like the dungeon crawling in this game is taking place on a 2D plane. There is a jump, no double jump yet, but it's not a detective game. So,
yeah.
You can also like strike an enemy with your sword in order to initiate combat and try to gain an advantage, like an ambush or something like that. There are some technical issues. There's like some frame hiccups. I haven't had any crashes yet. The menus are slow to get in and out of. Load times are kind of a slog. So it's not a buttery smooth experience in a technical sense, but it's fine. Overall, like, it's okay. There's nothing really like inspiring about it so far. But you know, we'll see what happens as I get deeper into the job system. If there's something fun, it's weird because they give you like these 8 party members. You're like your tanky character. Your speedy warrior class, you get a thief, a black mage, a white mage, a summoner, a character that attacks with dark magic, and a character that attacks physically, but with like magical elemental elements, like a water blade attack and a thunder blade attack, that sort of thing. But my party makeup has just been like tanky, striker, white mage, black mage. And that has been the best setup I've been able to find so far, which is really just boilerplate JRPG party setup. So I'm hoping that at some point I'll be required to use some of the more nuanced characters and techniques, but we'll see. Judy Hoops.
Yeah.
Take us away.
You got like the review up here for me.
Oh, I was just skimming what they say. Okay. I mean, no, that's fine. It gets middling reviews from critics and fans, depending upon the platform. By the way, this is on every platform.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's not on the DS, but it's on most platforms.
It's on the only one that matters, the Switch.
Yeah, yeah, you got Switch, PC, all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, it seems like that's kind of what people are saying about it.
I can't talk about New World now that I see that ad there. I did play a little New World.
Yeah.
Which, you can talk about Street Hoops.
Yeah, you don't want to get into it?
I mean, I can, but, yeah.
I mean, well, here's the thing. We're into preseason still. Like, the actual NDA hasn't started up, but there has been all kinds of drama already. And again, I feel like all the sports stuff I want to talk about is the drama surrounding the sports rather than it is the actual.
That guy get a COVID shot yet?
Bingo, that's the kind of thing I wanted to talk about, is Kyrie Irving. And no, he's pretty much refusing to get it. And this is kind of a weird scenario to be in, because apparently New York City, the arena that Kyrie Irving plays at, he plays with the Brooklyn Nets, they have a rule at the venue that if you're performing there, you have to be vaccinated, or if you're a performer there, you have to be vaccinated. And there is some nuance to it, like, if you're traveling in a concert, like that's doing a tour around America, you don't need to be vaccinated. But if you're part of like a stage troupe that has like performances routinely at a venue, everyone has to be vaccinated.
It's interesting that they don't require the traveling, because like if you're traveling a lot, you could be spreading stuff. Anyway, I'm sure they've given it more thought than I have.
I don't know why they did that. Probably because they did what they thought they could get away with, you know, in terms of just wanting to enforce as much, you know, vaccine mandates as they can, which I'm all for. Everyone should get the vaccine. Like, do it. This is a good rule, not a bad rule, in my opinion.
Yeah, why are we playing down to people who are just so willing to get other people killed?
Yeah. So, Kyrie Irving is a basketball player, and admittedly, he is the third best player on the Brooklyn Nets, but he would probably be the best player on half of the teams in the NBA. He is very, very good. The Brooklyn Nets are just stacked. But he is refusing to take the vaccine. And it means because this venue has this enforcement policy that he wouldn't be able to play any home games.
Mm.
And a couple other venues. I don't even know if he'd be allowed to travel to Canada to play in Toronto without a vaccine. So he's put them in this weird spot. And he can't practice with the team. They're not going to move their practices to another facility in New Jersey just because Kyrie Irving refuses to get the fucking shot. And he's the only player in the NBA that's doing this right now. The only other one that was a holdout did so and literally said is because I'm concerned about my family and I want to create generational wealth.
Mm.
I want my grandkids to not to be financially secure. So I'll get a fucking shot if this means, you know, I get my money. So Kyrie Irving...
That's a good enough reason as any.
Yeah. Kyrie Irving, he's won an NBA title and he's made $100 million. And he sort of is in this position where he can take this stand. But again, because it's half of these games, the team basically had to step in and say, look, we're not going to trade you. You've ruined your trade value. But we're not going to let you play with the team. You're not a part of this team until you're vaccinated. And what that means is, like, they could play him in away games, but they couldn't practice with him, and they couldn't use him at home. So, like, what's the point of even having this game? It doesn't matter how good he is.
Mm.
Like, that's no way... You don't want to encourage someone to be there half the time because they think that they're smarter than everybody else.
Yeah, it'd be a really disruptive thing to just your team chemistry. Like, here's a guy who's going to be with us, like, maybe 40% of the time. So we're going to...
So
things are in 40% of the games. Things are just going to change how we operate.
And this puts him in a weird spot because it means half of his paychecks get withheld.
Hmm.
It means that if it's an away game, they could play him, but their team is choosing not to. If it's a home game, that means because he is basically making it so he can't play there. So they are now putting his entire salary in escrow. And he only has one more year left on his deal. And he's poisoning the well with his teammates. His teammates now despise the guy. They're like, we want to win a fucking title. We're doing this because we're professional athletes. We care about this. And you are reading your fucking Instagram posts or something that are telling you that this... Again, Kyrie Irving is famously the flat earth guy. He doesn't believe the earth is flat anymore, but he entertained this thought for a long... He's kind of this that type that thinks they're smarter than everyone else and sees the world as a bunch of sheeple that are, you know, conforming to lies and to whatever they're told. And he's the one that's taken the veil off and sees all, you know? And it's just, this guy's just so fucking stupid. And it's hard to say that to him because he's also a very generous person. Like, he gives away a ton of the money he makes to charitable causes, to the needy and stuff like that. So, you know, his heart is in the right place. His mind is fucking diseased. It is rotten. If he thinks that this is the way to go about this. So he's basically been put now in a spot where it's like, are you just going to retire? Is this the end of your NBA career? Are you going to try to come back in a year? Because nobody's going to want you. I mean, well, the Orlando Magic would give him an offer in 2 years when, we're going to live with COVID forever, right? But when it sort of blows over to the point where he could, you know, play wherever, I guess.
Mm. Like, yeah, when it gets to the point where, you know, there are therapeutics widespread enough and enough people have either been vaccinated or died to where, you know, it's not, it's, it, it, it comes back down to the level of something like influenza.
Yeah, yeah. And I heard, what is it? This is, I think, 3.2 billion people in the world are now vaccinated.
Mm.
He's taking a stand to do something that 3.2 billion people have already done.
There's been a lot of test subjects.
Ignorance.
There's been a lot of test subjects.
Right. Oh, and that's what everyone's making fun of him saying. It's like, what research are you doing? Like, what double-blind studies are you performing over there, fucking Kyrie Irving, you moron?
Right.
Like, again, the more I think about this, the less and less sympathetic I get towards this guy, because this is harmful to him. It's harmful to anybody that cares what he thinks about anything. He influences a lot of people. So he's just poisoning the minds of so many others. Just... dragging his... Just fucking retire, dude. Like, and right now he wants to collect his paycheck because he's got this weaselly little way of making half of his salary while damning his team, you know? Like, I would never want to... I mean, in my professional life, I would never work with someone like that.
Yeah.
Who just says, like, oh, I've got you on a technicality, I guess I don't have to work. You know? Like, sitting there, like watching you do all the work while they sit on the couch and just like oh, John's doing the work. Like
if they won without him, would he get a ring? He's on the team.
I don't know.
Wouldn't that be some shit?
I would think that if there was any serious likelihood that they would cut him before. Okay. I mean, and again, like, what does it matter? Yeah, go ahead. Here's our ring. Have a ring. You'll never be welcome at this arena ever again. We'll never put your banner in our rafters. Like, fuck off. Like, again, he's poisoned his entire brand, his name. He'll lose all of his contracts. You know, and that's where, for a lot of these guys, the real money is. Like, he'll lose his shoe deals and stuff. Or, I mean, maybe he'll still have a shoe deal, but, like, wearing them means, look at me, I'm a moron. Like, again, it's so ridiculous that he did this. So that's that. And again, this is preseason basketball, so it's not that big a deal. But the Lakers picked up this guy, Russell Westbrook, who I love.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's kind of like Russell Westbrook is never going to win a title. He's just the kind of guy that doesn't seem like he's ever going to win a title because of the way he plays. He's like, I don't know, how would you describe it? Like, he behaves like the way a dog does. Like, you throw a tennis ball and the golden retriever just runs its fucking ass off and it's so excited about the ball. But at no point does it ever calculate its next move. You know? It's like, that's kind of how he is. Like, he's incredible to watch because he's so physical and plays so hard. But he just isn't really a team player. And the Lakers are a team that have, you know, LeBron James, Anthony Davis already. So how is this guy going to fit in? He's played terribly, terribly in his first four games here. He's, like, shooting 20%. He's getting three turnovers for every assist. And he's getting a lot of turnovers. He had a game where he had 9 turnovers in, like, 20 minutes.
My goodness, who's he playing for?
He's not even
playing for the other team.
Right, yeah. Like, they just had a game against the Golden State Warriors, and none of the stars for Golden State Warriors played, and they lost by 15 points with the entire starting lineup there. So LeBron James, AD... They got Carmelo Anthony now, and him, all are on the court, and they just, and again, it's preseason, let's wait till it's the actual, you know, season started up.
Games that count.
Yeah, what this team really ends up looking like, because right now it could all be chemistry stuff, and they're trying to figure out the rotation, but.
You know what I always wondered about basketball? Mm-hmm. Is why at halftime do they switch hoops?
Probably to have it so that when you're taking the ball down the court, you don't want to have your opposing team's bench right there. Like you're about to take a corner three, and everyone behind you is on the opposing team just yelling shit in your ear. Would you want that, or would you want your own team behind?
Then why wouldn't they just keep the team at your basket throughout the whole game? Is it like maybe a fan thing? Like,
they want to get tampering, like... and to prevent, and just to, you know, sports athletes are the most superstitious people in the world. They would tell you, somebody would tell you, it's unfair to only play at one hoop or the other hoop. You would then have people designing arenas such that one hoop was more advantageous. Okay,
this is the home hoop and this is the away hoop.
Right.
This one's slightly smaller and the rims bounce more.
Have you ever seen, this is an obscure reference, but have you ever seen the Vanderbilt Commodores, their basketball court? It's interesting. They make the teams sit behind the baskets. The court itself is elevated 2 feet off the ground.
Oh, interesting.
It's so unnerving.
So yeah. When it like goes out of bounds, it's rolling off of like a stage?
Essentially, yeah. Yeah. Like when you're talking to your team, you're looking down at them. And they, and it's something that if you play for the team, you're used to it. It makes sense to you. It must be so confusing. You're always looking to the same spot to find your team and to find it, and then you're like, oh no, you're down there. You know? It's a funny thing. You get all, again, you would find all kinds of trickery and bullshit happening. Oh, chicanery, they call it. There would be a lot of chicanery happening.
I love that sort of shit, though. Like, I love that the baseball stadiums and fields are all different dimensions and have all, like, these weird quirks to them.
Except the Yankees, they don't love that green monster.
I love the green monster. I love the short fence over in right field now. That's thank God that fence is only 5 feet tall.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, any what else about shooty hoops we need to get to?
That kind of covers it. I mean, the season starts up in about a week, so we'll actually have some legit NBA happening. I think the teams, everyone thought the Nets were the odds-on betting favorites, but
now that, so were the Rays.
Now that Kyrie's in question, it's who's to say. Oh, and Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is the other problem child. He plays for the 76ers, and he was basically he just recently got his bluff called, where he was refusing to play for Philadelphia. Kind of burned every bridge there. He hates the team. Basically says he won't play for them. Like, he'll be there in person, I guess, but only until they trade him, and he has no intentions of contributing to the team. Again, just basically saying, like, fuck you guys. And they've treated him... Well, it's sort of a... He fails to do the basic things. He's like a 50% free throw shooter. Garbage. That means that he just gets fouled and he can't make free throws. Like, if you should hopefully average more than 1 point per possession. And if that's you're making 50% of your free throws, just keep fouling the guy and you'll win. That's just an easy strategy to win. Doesn't even matter who the other four guys on the court are. Right? But at any rate, yeah, there's a very toxic scenario. He's damaged his... The trade that everyone says would make actually perfect sense, and it kind of would work, would be to trade Kyrie for Ben Simmons. The two problem childs from just what most people would say are two of the three best teams in the East. Just get swapped. Maybe they work out better there. You know, assuming Ben... And that's the other thing. No one's certain if Ben Simmons has been vaccinated yet.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So we can get traded and then find out he's not vaccinated either. And then they're back to square one. And
with that would be delightful.
Yeah.
I hope that all happens.
So that's... I mean, there's a ton of stuff to talk about in the NFL as well, but that I think that covers basketball.
Okay.
Do you want to move on to baseball, or would you like some NFL chatter?
Oh, sure. Let's move over to baseball. We've alluded to already, though, that the Red Sox advance.
They do.
They're going to the American League Championship game.
Yes. And, rumors of their death were greatly exaggerated.
Right. And, you know, as we've talked about many times before, I had zero expectations for this season. I thought that they would be above 500. I thought they'd be competitive. I did not think they'd make the playoffs. And here they are, one of two teams left in the American League.
That's nuts.
Yeah. End of the Yankee season.
That's what happens when you have a Ninja Turtle at third base.
It's true. Yeah. You get Rafael there slugging home runs.
Yep.
Took out the Yankees. End of the Yankees season, finally. They're finally able to pull that off.
That was nice.
Yeah, which was great. It's so amazing. I've been listening to a lot of, like, Yankees radio recently. Just really taken all of the salt because they are desperate. They're desperate there because they haven't won a championship in 12 years. Woe is them. And then they keep on making the comparisons. Like,
someone said that it's been a full decade since any title in a major sport has been won in the city of in New York City.
I don't know what to tell them. Get good.
The last time would be Eli Manning's Super Bowl win over Tom Brady.
Oh, that's got to be extra salty for them. The last guy to do is Eli Manning.
Right, yeah.
So... it's just been really fun not only to see the Red Sox, you know, able to scrap out these wins and playing, like, with a lot of energy and playing really loose. Like, they're playing
they
the game
like
of baseball.
They're playing with house money.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
They're very loose about it. They're just having a good time.
No one expects them to win. I'm 100% sure that, you know, when the predictions come in for the ALCS, they're playing the Houston Astros. Everyone's going to expect the Astros to win and win pretty easily. And the Red Sox keep proving that, you know, it's not easy to beat them. They just kind of find what they need to do and do it. So they totally outperformed the Rays offensively. They had like 7 or 8 guys in their lineup that were hitting like 300 and 400 throughout the series. They got a couple of really lucky breaks, most notably in Game 3 with that ground rule double that went that bounced off the wall, off the ground, off Hunter Renfro, and then over the bullpen fence there, which typically those fences in the outfield are like 10 feet tall, and for whatever reason at Fenway they're 5 feet tall. If it was 2 feet taller than that, it would have just bounced off the wall again and been like a double that actually scores the runner on base. But because of, you know, how ground rules operate, you know, the runners are only allowed to advance in a ground rule double. If there's runners on base, they advance 2 bases from the time of the pitch. So, you know, everyone in Tampa was up in arms about, like, oh, he was already rounding. He was past third base and on his way home by the time it went over the fence. He should have just been allowed to go home. And, you know, if you want to revisit ground rules, cool. You can get everyone together and agree on some ground rules. But the rule as it is, like, from the time of the pitch, you get to go two bases, which means you go from first to third, and that's where you are.
Yeah.
The Red Sox also got some really gritty performances out of starters who ended up coming out of the bullpen. Tanner Houck, Nick Pivetta, they pitched a lot of innings in relief when, you know, they're typically starting pitchers, but kind of like how Eovaldi did back in 2018, where he pitched the six innings in that 18-inning game right at the end there.
Yeah.
Still lost the game, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, that was heroic, though.
Yeah, but yeah, there were statues of Eovaldi in Boston the next day.
Well, also, like, that last game that they had in their series with the Rays was pretty cardiac, right? Because they put that early five-run lead on it. It's 5-0, and it's like, okay.
Oh, yeah. They're cruising now.
And then it's one run in one inning, and then it's two runs the next inning, and then it's another run, and you're like, oh, you fuckers.
Yeah.
You gave them back five, and they tied it up 5-5, and thankfully got it done. Got it done in the ninth inning, not needing to go into any extra innings.
No, they were able to get the sacrifice fly out there and score somebody.
That would have been a heartbreaker. If they ended up losing that one, and then they got to go play another game and then drop Canna, I guess. So.
Yeah, down in Tampa, but you know.
They figured it out.
Yeah, didn't work out that way, and everything was sunny.
Yeah.
But yeah, they don't start the AOCS for another couple of days, so I think they'll have their rotation all lined up, and I think it'll line up to where they can get Chris Sale in there for game one on regular rest, because he's had some performance issues when he's been going on short rest, which, you know, he pitched game two in Tampa. And he wasn't very good. And then Tanner Houck was able to come in and go four or five innings to get them to keep them in the game.
Yeah.
But Chris Sale, when he's on regular rest, has been really good. And if I were the Astros, I wouldn't want to see Chris Sale after he had a bad start, because he's going to be out for blood.
Yep. But yeah, I guess though, that means that the NL, we got the Dodgers, right? And then is it...
Dodgers and Giants. I don't know if they've played Game 5 yet. I think they're doing Game 5 tonight.
Oh, okay, so that's being decided still.
I think it's going to be the Giants, though. Like, the Dodgers are real good, but the Giants seem like they're a team that's not going to be denied.
Mm-hmm.
And then in... I don't know if the Braves have finished off the Brewers yet, because the Braves were leading that series. And the Brewers did have a good night offensively, but they look so offensively inept right now. Like, they have really good starting pitching, but they can't score runs. And you need to score at least one run in order to win, and they have a hard time with that.
Oh, yeah, the Braves did lock it up.
Yep.
The Braves got it, and they're playing tomorrow, Dodgers-Giants.
Okay.
And then Friday, everything kicks off with... Sox Astros.
I was really hoping that the White Sox would be able to take the Astros to a game five and just kind of keep their pitching situation in a bit of a disarray.
But yeah, that means they're going to get an equal rest or one extra day rest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When it would have been nice to get probably two more days.
Well, the Red Sox, the ALCS wouldn't have started till Friday either way, but if they had to play a game five, they would have had to, you know, travel to Houston, which wouldn't have been too big a deal for the Astros, because the Astros are going to have home field advantage against the Red Sox. But they would have had to, you know, throw another starting pitcher out there and use more of their bullpen, which, you know, does... you're putting extra miles on those arms, and every little bit will help.
Yep.
But yeah.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah. There was this really great Pete Rose quote that I wish I had. I kept my phone on me because I had it on there, but there are throughout the Yankee sphere of talking heads, you know, the people that want, you know, basically the general manager, the president of baseball operations, they want him gone. They want, like, the team manager, the coach, Aaron Boone, they want him gone. They want, like, the entire lineup scrapped. They want to burn it down and start over. And then there are other people that are like, well, you know, if you fire, you know, the manager, the general manager, they'll just find other jobs really easily elsewhere. Well, that's not a reason to hang on to someone. Like, we keep
somewhere else. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, keep someone so that they can't go anywhere else. Like, if you're so displeased with the job that your general manager is doing, maybe they'll go just fuck up another team and stop fucking up yours.
Yeah.
Well,
also, it's hard to say that they're fucking up. Like, they've made the playoffs like the past 5 years in a row.
Right.
They've just run into some historically great teams. I'm not picking a side here, but the Astros did cheat their way into a title.
Sure did.
So they got a bone to pick with the Astros, certainly, because that could have been them.
Mm.
You know, on a fair field.
I think the Astros still would have won where they cheated or not. The Astros are really good.
Yeah, the Astros are very good.
And fuck the Yankees, they suck. Clearly, they can't get into the playoffs. They can't make a World Series.
They actually started a Yankees suck chant.
Yeah, yeah.
During the last game with the Rays.
Wow, that's amazing. Because I love so much seeing them so miserable. I love seeing them like wanting to blow up their entire team. Because there was like 3 and 4 or 5 years ago, there was so much hype around all like these young, talented players coming up through the Yankee system and how they're going to be great and be this next dynasty. And they're going to win World Series for 10 years. None of those players have worked out, except for Aaron Judge. He's the one guy who has worked out from the Yankees farm system. And now a lot of the Yankees talking heads are like, well, you just got to go out. You got to spend money. You got to go spend the money you got. You're the Yankees. Just go buy players. Get every free agent and buy yourself a World Series is essentially what they're getting at. And yes, please do.
So it's the reverse strategy of like what they're doing with their management, where they're just like, get rid of them. And it's like, no, spend all of the money to take them away from other teams.
Right. Yes, please. I know Brian Cashman, you know, the president of baseball operations for the Yankees, listens. He listens to this show. Yes. Please go spend so much money and tether yourself down with all these players who are not going to work out for you.
Just tap the management of the Rays. Just tap their phone lines. And then just try to make the calls faster than you can to acquire the same people that they want to acquire.
It's so funny because the Yankees try to emulate the Rays so much, except for maybe some like the pitching shenanigans that the Rays get into with, you know, having a game opener and throwing bullpen games. The Rays get very experimental with their starting pitching situation, their bullpen situation, where they pretty much approach it from like, we don't need a starting pitcher. We just need guys who are going to get us 27 outs throughout the entire game.
Yeah.
And some of that, you know, to an extent permeates the rest of baseball, where you don't see, especially the playoff starters, going more than 5 innings. You pretty much go through twice through the lineup, and then you start going to your bullpen, because the more the lineup sees the starter, the more vulnerable they are, or so the numbers show. And, you know, I think there's also some nuance to that. If Chris Sale goes 5 innings, has thrown, you know, 60 pitches, and struck out 9 guys, you fucking keep Chris Sale in there. So it also depends on who's throwing. But, you know, Alex Cora's a weird dude, and he's going to do whatever the fuck he feels like. But yeah, it's just so much fun to see the Red Sox like overperforming expectations and the Yankees underperforming expectations. It's so fucking nice. Oh, Pete Rose. I mentioned Pete Rose. He'll never be in the Hall of Fame, but an extremely good baseball player, also a cheater. But he pretty much had this quote about the Yankees. It was pretty much like, oh yeah, their team is bullshit. When you have a team where your 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th hitters are automatic outs, of course you're not going to win. and he like took shots at specific players, like when Joey Gallo's your number 4 guy, like you better have, you know, a Stanton and Judge performing, because he's not going to help you at all. It's just so funny to like see, you know, people getting specific about who fucking sucks.
Did Pete Rose even play for them? I didn't even think he played for the
Yankees. No, he didn't play for the Yankees.
He was a Reds guy, I thought. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No.
And a cheater,
yeah. Definitely a cheater. But hey, he never bet on any games he played. Or no, he bet on the games he played in, but only to win. He doesn't even never bet against his own team.
He's always betting on himself. Yeah,
right. You know, that's kind of a dirtbag thing to do. But, you know, I guess they didn't have buzzers and trash cans back then.
I can't believe we've never gotten any sort of conclusion about the buzzer situation.
Yeah.
Because, come on. Come on.
I saw that the Sox beamed fucking what's-his-face in the last game. Josie Altuve.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he took a ball. And then everyone was cheering it. I mean, he's got to feel it. I mean, you know, he won. Steaks still taste sweet and he gets to buy the best steaks.
Yeah.
But it's like, you got to realize you're kind of thought of as a dirtbag to everybody that doesn't have an Astros cap on.
And they're kind of owning it. They're owning the villain role pretty well. Mm-hmm. I would have much rather have seen the White Sox than the Astros, you know. Like, again, like, I'm still not super optimistic. Like, it's cool to, like, watch the Red Sox play really loose and have almost no stakes. Like, I think they could win. They could not win. Either way, they've done a whole lot better than I thought they were going to do, and it's been awesome.
Yeah, it's but it's one of those things. I heard someone say it where they're like, I'm not surprised, but I'm shocked. It's sort of like, I'm not surprised that the AL would come down to the Astros and Boston, but I'm shocked that this is how it happened.
Yeah, because they had to go through Tampa, and Tampa's really good.
Yeah.
But I would have much rather seen the White Sox, because the White Sox, you know, still a very good team. They won their division, but I think they're more of like on the same level as the Red Sox, and they were in a very weak division. Like, they got to go through the AL Central in order to get to the playoffs. And I don't know, I don't think there was another team above 500 in their division, whereas the Red Sox went through the AL East, where there are four teams that won 90 games.
Yeah, so that's rough.
Bit of a tougher road. Mm-hmm. Anything about football that you want to address?
Yeah, it's getting late, but we can talk real quick, hit some stuff.
Okay.
So two big dramatic things happened, one involving John Gruden.
Coach the Raiders.
Yeah. Former Tampa coach, won a title with them in the early 2000s. He was a longtime Monday Night Football commentator, the color commentator on that. And recently he became the head coach of the now Las Vegas Raiders.
Okay.
And this email scandal blew up, where all of these emails came out, and he was using a whole series of racist and homophobic things, and I didn't even look into all of it, but the couple I heard, I'm like, oh, you're gone, that's the end of you as a head coach. But I think a lot of people were like, maybe this will blow over, and no, like, literally as of 48 hours ago he was fired. Or he stepped down, he tendered his resignation probably at gunpoint.
He didn't get fired, they told him to resign,
right? Precisely. Yeah. And I mean, who would have thought that would have happened? And again, it's also like the people that he was with. One of them was, it was like in this email chat thread or whatever with like a bunch of executives in the NFL. So everyone had a view of this. You know that chicken restaurant PDQ?
No.
Here in Orlando? They're all over the place, but the owner of that franchise was apparently in the thread. It was a bunch of rich white people. What rich white men.
Uh-huh.
Kind of yucking it up and shitting on minorities and homosexuals. Oh, and the Raiders have currently the only openly homosexual player in the NFL.
Mm.
So, like, how's that guy going to feel about that? You know, or the 75% of players in the NFL, including on his own team, who are black. Probably don't like hearing the, not racial slurs, but the racist depictions and stereotypes that he was putting in his emails.
Yeah, boy.
So, yeah, the guy is kind of a dirtbag. And, you know, he really burned his bridge there. But what's wild is nobody would have told, if you had told me this 2 weeks ago, we're now 10 days removed from another scandal involving Urban Meyer. Do you know who Urban Meyer is?
Was he with the Colts?
No, he's most known for college football.
I'm thinking of Tony Dungy. Okay. Yes. Urban Meyer.
Yeah. Oh, Tony Dungy spoke out and said that he's... basically defended Gruden.
Oh, yeah?
Where he's like, oh, I've known Gruden for years, and he's never said anything like that.
Well, he put it in writing.
Yeah, you fucking put the clickety-clackers to the
I mean, I think that's pretty much stronger evidence, because you can just read it back to him like,
You don't need to defend this guy, it's fine. Oh, but yeah, so Urban Meyer was a college coach, and he won a bunch of titles, he won two titles with the University of Florida.
Okay.
Then went to Ohio State and won some titles there. And now, finally, he's sort of been this prized thing that everyone's been like, when is this guy going to coach a football team in the NFL? And he did. He just took an NFL coaching job in Jacksonville when they just picked up this real hotshot quarterback. And it has not gone well to the point where he is, like, a lot of people were just presuming he would be fired as well, because, you know, he could have gone 0-17 this season, and he probably would have been fine if it was just all on the field stuff. Like, nobody expects the Jaguars to be any good. They won 2 games last year. They got a new quarterback. This is a whole new scenario then, right? But they've lost their first 5 games in a row.
Oh, no.
And apparently on the loss of the 5th game, rather than flying back with the team, which is what, like, unless someone in your family just died or is about to die, you're on that plane with your team going back.
Right.
He decided to stay in the town that they were at because he knew a friend that was opening a restaurant or something. Right? So that's, again, just kind of like a shitty move, but whatever. You know, you should be there with your team that's losing, but... You know, then that, and then this video leaks of him at the bar, and there's like this woman kind of giving him a lap dance, okay. Not like a stripper or anything, but just like some young girl is there doing that, and it's like, wait a minute, he's a family man and he's married, and at the same time, like, hey, there's all of this shit where it's like, oh my god, this is the worst thing you could have been doing, and he gets caught doing it, right?
So that everyone's not, like, not necessarily doing anything illegal, I presume,
right.
I assume that the girl performing some sort of service is of age.
It's from what it's a bad look. It was a it's a but bad look. He yeah, wasn't the, trying to get with this.
The
woman.
Optics is bad. Like, this is not the image that you have cultivated for yourself. Also, your team is losing, and it looks like you don't give a shit.
Don't be partying, or just if you want to go to this event, literally just fly back, take another flight, take another flight. You know, is it Shad Khan is the guy that owns the Jaguars? He has multiple planes. He'll give his head coach, who he personally recruited, a plane to go somewhere. Even if the team's 0-5. Just a dumb fucking move. And so, like, literally, everyone's like, oh, okay, so Urban Meyer's going to get fired any day now. And it's like, oh, wait, no, John Gruden just got fired. So all that's going down. It's nuts. So, the other big story on the field is that the Kansas City Chiefs are not good this year. Or they're having a very, very rough go of it early on. They're 2-3 for a team that most people would have said should be 5-0 right now. They are really, really good. They've only lost a handful of games in the past, like, 3 years. They've made it to consecutive Super Bowls and won one of them. The other one, they lost to Tampa last year. So for them to be falling off like this is, it's bad. It's pretty bad for them.
I got the Tom Brady curse.
Yeah, it really, and it shakes up their whole division. By the way, this is the one that has had John Gruden in it with the Raiders. And the Raiders are now the second team in the division. The Kansas City Chiefs are now the worst team in their division. You know, it would be like if the Yankees, like, there are worse teams in the AL East. It would be like the Yankees being the worst team in the AL. There will always be Baltimore.
I know. They're just all competing for second worst.
Right.
But yeah, you know, like 2-3, they got time to turn it around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the NFC West, which is a division that has the Rams. The Rams won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. The Seahawks have a winning tradition. The 49ers lost a Super Bowl. Two were the ones that lost to the Chiefs 2 years ago. The undefeated Arizona Cardinals are the number one team in that division.
Okay. Good for them.
Yeah, football's been really, really exciting this year. There's been a lot of really fun teams to watch. I mean, the Buffalo Bills are the best team in the AFC East over the New England Patriots. Like,
they need to change their name to the New England Tom Brady's and make amends.
Yeah. Oh, Tom Brady went back there and played, too.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, he broke the all-time passing yards record on New England's turf in Foxborough.
Wearing a fucking uniform.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
That's pretty funny. But yeah.
He's going to play until he's 50.
Yeah, he's playing his mind out. It's not only that he's playing, like, everyone's like, oh, he's for a 40-something-year-old. That's like, no, he's just arguably the best quarterback in the NFL right now. There's a couple of guys that are... Yeah, there have just been some heroic football games that have happened. Like, there have been some really just top-notch games happening. Like, super exciting to watch. Like, yeah, some teams are bad, some teams are not that good. But, like, so many of the games I've watched have been absolutely exciting. So, and it's great seeing everyone back in the stands, too. Hopefully with their vaccines, but, you know, it's just nice. It feels like football again.
What you were saying about quarterbacks reminded me of something I was reading earlier today about, like, the sort of bizarre nature. Like, it was specifically referencing the Red Sox, even though it did not mention them by name, but sort of bizarre baseball postseason and how all these teams come into it. Like, here's our winning formula. Here's what we did to win all these games during the regular season, and how it has such a hard time translating into a baseball postseason, because it all gets condensed. Like, over the course of 162 games, you won 100 of them, but now you got to win 3 out of 4 or 3 out of 5.
Yeah, best first to 3, best of 5. Yeah.
Right. So, and the comparison they kept they started with was like in basketball or in hockey, you need a great goalie. Best goalie will win. In basketball, you need the 3 best players on the court. Like, if you have the 3 best players on your team, you're going to win.
Yeah.
In football, you need the best quarterback. If you have the best quarterback on the field, you're probably going to win.
Typically, yeah.
But there's no, like even if you have, like, the best starting pitching staff in baseball, that's not a guaranteed win. The Rays lost. The only thing that seems to be consistent is if you out-homer the other team on the field during that series, you'll win. But there's no way to predict if that's going to happen or not. I'm fairly certain the Yankees out-homered the Red Sox over the course of a season, but they lost their one game play-in.
Yeah.
So, and it's just interesting how, like, the sort of a formula to a winning team in other sports will then kind of smoothly transition. And it maybe is because, like, in football, it is still just a one game matchup for in a playoff.
Because no one player can really take over a baseball game, even at their best. Even if Barry Bonds is getting on base every single time he's at bat because he's getting walked, you know, he's not guaranteed to. Did he ever win a title? I don't know if he ever actually won a title.
I think he maybe with San Francisco. I'm gonna have to look it up.
Yeah,
but he
never strung off a ton of rings in his career just because he could do that. It's if anything, baseball's the most team sport.
Yeah, which is funny because when you go to the plate, it's such an individual matchup. It's you and the pitcher. And, you know, the defense has also been factoring into it more because, you know, of the more analytically minded teams will put, like, things like a shift and shuffle players around in order to try to be where the ball is most likely to go. But, you know, it still just comes down to the one guy throwing the one ball, and you're the one guy with the stick. But yeah, you if Chris Sale takes the mound and strikes out 27 batters and gets every single out, like, you still need a guy to score.
And that what happened to Max Scherzer, where it was like, you know, he got like 10 strikeouts and he allowed us one solo homer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they lost the game 1-0.
Yep. They got to show you, gotta put some points on the board, guys.
Yeah, it's tough.
But yeah. Anyway, we've been going on for a while now.
Yeah, sure have.
It's getting late. We're going to do a retro show. It's going to be a good one.
I think so. I've watched a couple of the movies.
Yeah, I've listened to a couple of the albums.
Oh, very good.
So yeah, and I've been playing some of the games.
Majora's Mask, right?
Yeah, Majora's Mask. Nice. We'll also talk about Pokemon Gen 2. Doing great.
Exciting.
Ogre Battle 64. Those are the main topics. But anyway, that's it. That's the end. Until next time.
So long.
Sayonara. Thank you.